Froome FM. Your shout. Your shout. Your shout.
Mike Walker broadcasting to you on Froome FM on 87.7 MHz. This is Your Shout.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Mike Walker, and I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio this morning our guests on the subject of quarry safety. We've got David Ambrose, who's Foster Yeoman Quarry Manager. Good morning, David. And Elizabeth Clements, who is Communications Director for the Quarry Products Association. Good morning, Elizabeth. Welcome to you both. Our subject this morning is a serious one. Every year, the quarry industry set to work on getting together a safety campaign to prevent what has been a sort of a regular spate of accidents in working and disused quarries. And our first thing to listen to is a pre-recording I made with David Weeks, who's Communication Officer of Hanson Quarries, and this is him talking about what the campaign is.
So every year the quarrying industry get together and launch a campaign, principally through the media, but also through the schools, to flag up the dangers to children of playing in quarries. It's something that we see as vitally important. It's one of the few areas where the quarrying industry does come together because we share the same problems and issues here. And of course, with East Mendip and the Froome area being such a strong quarrying area, we're having particular emphasis this year on the eastern half of the Mendips.
As David said, accidents are not waiting to happen. They are indeed happening already, and there have been a spate of accidents in the quarries over the last few years. And so next, please, I'd like to hear his version of what happened a few years ago when, unfortunately, a 16-year-old boy from Bath got himself into trouble in the quarries.
When there'd been quite a few people in the quarry during the day, and but this boy and a friend and two girls had gone in during the evening, were the only ones there. Darkness was creeping up. It was sort of August time. And they got round to the top of the quarry and got into the classic situation where one jumps in the water and the other one's encouraged to follow. Although the boy that got into difficulties couldn't swim. Now, the details of the story probably will never emerge, but the fact is that a boy leapt from a 12-metre-high quarry face and who couldn't swim.
So, I mean, what happened? Did his friends try to help him? Under what circumstances?
Yeah, it was a harrowing story where the boy who was in the water was encouraging his friend to jump, saying, and although he was saying, I can't swim, he said, don't worry, I'll get you to the side. And he can't have been any more than 2 or 3 metres from safety. But the second lad jumped in and immediately went straight to the bottom. When he did emerge back to the surface, spluttering, as people do when they're in trouble in water, he simply grabbed hold of the other boy and was pulling him down as well. And a situation arose where it was one boy couldn't swim and was panicking, the other one could swim and couldn't do anything about it, was panicking as well. And yet they were literally feet from safety. It was harrowing, very, very difficult time.
Now, you mentioned earlier, David, that the water is extremely cold, especially, you know, just below the surface.
Yes.
Could you give me the science of that? Why is it so cold in these quarry ponds?
Because they are so deep. Some of the water is 20 to 30 metres deep. And as you get below the surface is warmed by the sun, but it's not like being the seaside where the tide comes in, the water is relatively warm during the warm parts of the year. It tends to stay very cold.
Hello, Paul, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, welcome to the program, Paul.
Thank you.
I understand that your organization deals with many of these accidents which occur in disused and working quarries. I wonder whether you can outline to our listeners what the particular difficulties are for you in dealing with incidents of this kind.
Yes, certainly. Well, obviously we've got quite a high predominance of quarries around the Mendip area, which is covered by fire stations at Frome, Wells, Shemallet, in those particular areas. And it's fair to say to start with that the core activity of the fire service is to work with other agencies in terms of community safety, and within that community safety does encompass quarries. And we do, when required, work with quarry managers to prevent unauthorised use and safety issues, and even with the authorised use, sometimes accidents do occur. But, so we do try and risk assess and analyse the particular areas of danger so that we can try and bring some measures in to prevent these things happening. But sadly, when instances that was described just now occur, it does fall upon the fire service to try and provide some sort of rescue. And that brings its own particular problems to us as a fire service, where the access and the terrain of the quarries are so vast and so differing that it is very difficult to actually get to the scene of a potential rescue. And then once we get there, it's very, very resource intensive. It requires a huge number of firefighters with their equipment to actually respond to that. And whilst we are geared up in terms of equipment and training, it's something that fortunately we don't experience very often. So we need to adapt our skills to be able to traverse some of the quarry cliffs or go into the water rescue environment. And we do thankfully have good partnership working with people such as the Mendip Rescue Organisation, police and the paramedic service. So we do work together to enable us to carry out a rescue.
Paul, it sounds to me, I was born and brought up in North Wales, and I remember people talking about mountain rescue in much the same way. I mean, the message seems to be that if you get yourself into trouble in these places, that it's extremely difficult and a time-consuming exercise to help people out. Is that right?
It certainly is. I mean, in these days of modern communications and technology, people would think they get into difficulty, a simple mobile phone call 999 to the emergency services, and the emergency services would be able to respond rapidly enough to be able to get people out of predicament with minor injuries. Sadly, that's not the case. Some of the quarry areas are actual black spots for communications. So by the time that the alarm's been raised, sadly, it's too far down the line in terms of injuries and hypothermia and sadly resulting in death. But once the fire service and our other emergency services arrive, you know, generally people are in attendance in large groups, for example, where they may have been having a party or an ad hoc diving adventure, shall we say. And there's huge moral pressure put on the emergency services to get in and perform a rescue. You know, to be in that situation, you've got friends of the casualty actually, you know, trying to force you into the water to do something for that person. They're trying to carry out their own rescues. Really does bring some difficult scenarios for the emergency services, and it does put us as firefighters in a real high risk situation where the potential for injuries to ourselves is greater. And in the back of our minds, whilst we're carrying out these rescues, sadly with some serious injuries or potentially a fatal outcome, we've got the family in the back of our minds. We know that somebody somewhere will be getting that call soon to say that the person's being rescued or they've actually succumbed due to injuries due to unauthorised use in a quarry. And you know, that really does bring additional huge pressures at the scene and afterwards.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, you know, there's no reason why these incidents have to occur. You know, quarry managers work damn hard to make sure that their activities are safe and prevent people going in when they shouldn't be there. Half-term is a classic example when these times sort of things happen. But there's a huge range of activities out there. If people choose to research them, it's available on the internet. It's available from district councils. People and communities know the sort of activities that their people want to do. And there's no reason at all why people can't engage in the huge range of activities out there, depending on what they want to do, just by doing a bit of research. You know, going into these places unauthorised, taking risks when you don't need to, with the potential outcome of a fatality, it's just not worth the risk.
Paul, that's very, very interesting information. Thank you very, very much for joining us on the programme. I'm going to ring off now, but I'm sure your words will be heard by all the people in Frome District. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, let's turn some music now then, please, just to give some thinking time, and then I'll be inviting my guests to comment on what we've heard so far. Okay, David, you've heard the tragic retelling of the incident by David Weeks, and I suppose all of us would like to ask, really, who owns disused quarries? I think we know about the working ones, that's fairly clear, but who owns disused quarries, and whose responsibility is it, really, to secure them and to provide safety measures?
I mean, it's not always simple to identify who actually owns a quarry, especially some of the disused quarries, because we've been extracting rock for literally thousands of years. We've been using it as a building block for everything that we do. So certainly some of the older quarries, it might not be easy to actually identify who actually does own them and who's actually responsible for actually ensuring that they are kept in a safe condition. But certainly any of the more what you call modern quarries, there will be somebody, even if they appear to be abandoned, there will be somebody somewhere who is actually responsible for the upkeep of that quarry and to actually carry out inspections to ensure that it is safe. And certainly in the past, when I was quarrying in North Wales, I had five or six small disused quarries that I was actually responsible for going and actually ensuring that the fencing was there, there was appropriate signage in place, and that I was actually looking for any signs that that people were carrying out various activities like motorcycling or trying to go rock climbing or indeed people using it for camping and generally, you know, using it for sort of purposes that really they shouldn't be there.
Now, David, because they're very attractive places, aren't they? And they're very large areas. I mean, disused quarries are a nature wonderland. They're an adventure playground, I suspect, for a lot of young people. And they're massive. I mean, sometimes many, many miles in perimeter. I mean, how on earth can you successfully police that?
Well, it is very difficult to actually keep it all adequately fenced. And of course, a lot of people don't help us by actually vandalising the fencing that we put in place. So a lot of people don't make it easy for us, but we have an obligation to ensure that the quarries are fenced. It's in the various quarries regulations, and certainly in the Mines and Quarries Act as it was, and then the new quarries regulations. There is an ongoing obligation for us to ensure that the actual quarry faces are properly secured, and we actually ensure that they are safe places, irrespective of whether we've actually got people on the site at 24 hours a day or 7 days a week. We do have an obligation to ensure that they are adequately fenced to try and prevent people from getting in and injuring themselves.
And you say that people rip the fences out. I mean, I read somewhere that there are even websites where people are actually appealed to go on sort of leisure activities, weekends, diving, swimming and so on in disused quarries. And that must mean that a very large number of people converge on them on a sunny weekend. Do you have special patrols out on such times? What happens then?
I mean, certainly where we have got a problem area identified, it may well be that we do have security people to come and actually help us. And certainly, as a company, we can actually call on the services of a local security company, that if we do identify a problem, we can actually ask them to mobilise people to actually come and support us. But certainly it is very difficult if you're one person on your own trying to challenge 40, 50, 60 people, as sometimes happens. And again, in the past, I've been at a quarry where it was a large common area, and people used to, on a Sunday afternoon, come up motorcycling, and the site was literally 4 or 5 miles of hillside, and Sunday afternoon it was just one massive motorcycle track. There were motorcyclists driving around everywhere, and in those cases it is very difficult to actually try and prevent anybody from actually coming onto the site.
And so it's no wonder, really, isn't it, under those circumstances that accidents may sometimes occur. Tell me, David, I'm sure people out there might be just listening to this and thinking to themselves, well, okay, of course not you, because many of these quarries I know were created in the Victorian era or even earlier, but why isn't it implicit upon quarry industries, if they dig a huge hole in the ground and take out their minerals for years, that they don't fill it all in again or convert it to something socially useful at the end? What's impossible about that?
I think every site needs to be treated differently, because whether you're extracting hard rock, whether you're extracting sand and gravel, or other minerals, each is worked in a slightly different way and lends itself to a particular after use. Certainly some of the hard rock quarries, you know, may be very, very deep and have a large number of benches, whereas some of the sand and gravel quarries may be only extracting a mineral a few metres deep, and then it's relatively straightforward then to actually provide some sort of restoration to the faces to actually put them back to some sort of safe condition. It also depends heavily on the geology of the area with regard to the actual water flows coming into the sites. So in some areas, some of the quarries are actually filled using landfill operations, which are then capped over with sand and gravel, or sorry, with soils, and then can be actually restored back to agriculture. But you certainly can't do that in all cases. So each needs to be treated on its merits. And indeed, many people would argue that a number of the older quarries, really, we should not be restoring them back to agricultural purposes, because, as I think you pointed out, you know, they are now amazing wildlife refuges. Amazing plants and animals are actually living and growing in the actual quarries themselves. So many people would argue that really we do need to leave these as oases in an agricultural environment to actually encourage these things that are actually being lost from elsewhere.
Okay, well, we'll go on to that then after the next piece of music. This is Melanie with Lay Down.
You are so wrong, there was no.
I've got Elizabeth Clements, who is the Quarry Products Association Communications Director, sitting next to me. Hello again, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Now, Elizabeth, we heard a little bit from David Weeks about the dangers that exist in the quarries, particularly the coldness of the water. Could you just help our listeners know some of the other hazards that there are in quarries?
Well, I think, as David has already said, each quarry is an individual case. But in this area around Somerset, you've predominantly got large rock quarries. And, of course, it's very similar to thinking about going to the seaside. Most people would never attempt to climb up a rock face at a beach, you know, if you were somewhere down on the coast. And you've got to think about it like that. Or if you were walking in a national park, you wouldn't think ever about scrambling up a rock face. So one thing you've got to think about is the depths of the quarries and the fact that there is this hard rock. So we're talking about the danger of falling rocks. We're talking about the danger of flooded areas within the quarries, and particularly disused quarries, where, as already said, because of the depth of the hole that's filled with water, the water can be incredibly cold. And the difficulty is that under that water there might be all manner of things lurking, machinery, old machinery. As I said before, the difficulty is that once you get into any swimming situation where it's cold, heart-stoppingly cold, literally, you can have a fit quite easily. And it doesn't matter if you can swim or not. I remember years ago sitting in a radio broadcast studio with Sharon Davis, the Olympic swimmer. And she said that, you know, if she gets cramp, as she sometimes does even now, she can get into difficulty. People think that they're invulnerable. They think on a nice day that the water looks attractive and cooling. But we really want to say, please never, never be tempted to go into any form of water unguided, but particularly in these quarries where there's the deep water. Then there are the, there's this whole danger of, if you get into trouble, being left alone in a disused quarry or a quarry working week. They're such huge areas that it will be difficult to find you. I remember an incident again a few years ago where boys were out. They took their bikes down onto one of the ledges within the quarries and got stuck, and nobody found them for 24 hours. And I can tell you that those young teenagers were absolutely scared stiff when we got them out of the quarry.
Mm, thanks, Elizabeth. Now, David, we heard you talking about the security measures which you have to put in place around quarries. I understand the costs are quite massive. Hanson Quarries told me that they spent £100,000 a year on their security issues. What's your situation on that? Is it expensive?
Well, certainly where we are at Torworks, our annual bill would certainly be in the region of £100,000 for the security that we have, measures that we actually have to carry out. The actual site, we have on-site security guards, we have mobile security guards that come in at the weekends, and then all the costs associated with maintaining our fencing, our signage, those do add up to a substantial sum of money, and that's just on one site, without then multiplying that against all the other sites that the quarrying companies run.
And it's interesting, David, you mention a working site there, but of course a lot of the dangers, aren't there, are in disused quarries. I wonder what sort of figure is spent on keeping those secure.
I dread to think what the total bill would be to the actual quarrying companies across the country, but it would be a vast sum of money that we have to carry out.
Right. Now, let's move on to more pleasant things. I understand that in this day and age, if a quarrying company opens a quarry, then they have to make some sort of pledges on what's going to happen to it at the end of its working life, which sounds like a very interesting scheme to me. Can you outline what that is? What does it mean?
Well, certainly now, for all planning permissions now, before we would get grants of future mineral reserves, we actually have to put in place a scheme that would actually show how we would actually go about restoring the site. And the planning authorities would actually ensure that a lot of consultation took place on what would be an appropriate restoration program for a particular site, because each site is different. It needs to be treated on its merits. And certainly at Torworks, we've got some fairly extensive plans looking at how we're going to go about actually restoring the site.
Do tell us about this. What will Torworks look like in, say, 50 years' time?
We're actually now trying to create what we would call a sort of a man-made Cheddar Gorge.
Mm-hmm.
So a number of the actual faces now are being restored back to calcareous sort of grassland types of landscapes. So depending on the geology and the actual orientation of the faces, we're actually then restoring it back into different ways. Some places we're creating as a habitat where plants will grow. Other areas we're actually deliberately causing rocky type outcrops where we can encourage things like bats to actually, where bats will live. We've also got various birds of prey would like to actually nest in those faces, so we're actually trying to do that. We're also trying to create within the actual lake that will eventually form at Tor. We're aware that if you just leave them with too deep, then the actual nature doesn't actually take over very well. So we're actually creating areas now where there'll be shallow areas where we know that a natural ecosystem will actually begin to develop. And within that, you'll then be able to encourage fishes and all sorts of invertebrate that will actually come back and then make it a living environment as opposed to just a body of deep, cold water.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned the water there, because I understand in one quarry is being used as a deep-sea diving centre in the Mendip Sumber, isn't that right?
There is a site that is being used for diving operations.
Yeah, I mean,
that's correct.
Elizabeth, we've got, of course, in the West Country, we've got the fantastic Eden project, haven't we, which in fact was created in a disused quarry. Is there any hopes, you think, in the Mendips that we could have something similar in the future?
Well, I think quarry restoration design is becoming more and more innovative as we improve techniques over the years. I mean, ultimately, we like to think of quarries as borrowed land, particularly in the case of sand and gravel sites. They can go back to agriculture within the space of about 15 years. Clearly, with rock quarries, they tend to be around for a lot longer time. But the way that we work quarries is we tend to progressively restore them. So as we're working them, we're restoring them at the same time. But we work very, very closely with a lot of wildlife organisations, particularly English Nature, the Wildlife Trust, so that we're proud to say that a lot of people would never realise that what they might visit at the weekend as a wildlife reserve was once a former quarry. Mm. And that's just the sort of thing that we want to do. But clearly we are a working industry, and the corollary of that is that we also produce the rock and sand and gravel for houses, schools and hospitals. So I think that's also an important message. We're not a leisure industry.
It is indeed. But it's also a very very pleasant message to hear that at least with new quarries, there's all this planning implicit in them for the future. Let's listen to our next track of music now.
I know.
And I'm sure you'd all recognise that as Now We Are Free, the theme song from Gladiator. And of course, we're all going to be bits of Gladiator this morning, aren't we? We've heard some very, very, I think, positive views from the quarry industry about what's happening with modern quarries to protect them for in the future, their conversion into useful sites for the community, perhaps even other industries moving in. But we still got that vexed question, haven't we, about those disused quarries owned by multiple people, which are indeed an adventure playground, and they are attractive but also highly dangerous. And that's the problem we're trying to wrestle with here. So I want to pose the question to our two guests this morning about whether there is a forum, there is a group of people who could meet to think of ways of preserving the fantastic opportunity there are in these quarries for people to walk and enjoy and use them for their leisure. But in safety, who needs to be involved?
Well, I think there's a huge number of people that would need to actually be involved. I mean, obviously, one of the key things to actually is to include the local community, because I think unless you've got the local community with a direct involvement and a say in what we actually do with some of these sites, I think we'll always be struggling then to try and come up with, you know, an effective after use. So I think that's certainly essential that we do that. And then obviously the actual owners of the sites would also have to be heavily involved because of some of the ways that we can actually with some of the actual working sites, you can actually work it in certain ways that you can actually create a site that would be ideal for a particular types of after use. And certainly with some of the older sites, it's then a matter of looking at, you know, are there still reserves associated with some of those old sites, and then could we actually include that in our forward planning then as to how we're going to actually meet the needs of the society in future for aggregates, for building those things that we need to have in the community. And again, build that into our future planning as to what we do with the particular sites and where we may want to actually focus aggregates.
So what are we talking about here then, David? Is it a meeting of the local authorities, local industries, local communities to discuss these issues? And it just seems to me to be such a waste of money to be just patrolling and fencing and putting up signs which are torn down or fences which are ripped out by the people, where clearly there's a desire to use the places, but what we have to grapple with is to take away the dangers therein. So what can we do, Elizabeth? Who should we be talking to?
Well, I think at a national level, government's trying to get a bit more of a handle on this. I know that there's a research project that's just about to come into being looking at disused quarries across the country. And I think it needs to be slightly strategic because you don't want to end up with, you know, a lot of quarry lakes in the same place. You want to think that these places can be a real resource. But I think David's right. I think the local authority clearly has to take a major role because they are the body that would have been giving the planning permissions in the first place, and if you like, they're the overseer for the whole county. But clearly community people, maybe youth leaders, but then also people representing wildlife. There's so many interests now. Everybody has a voice in the local community. But I think as time moves on, I think also these things cost money. You mentioned the Eden project. That really was because there was an entrepreneur that was prepared to get involved. These things have to be paid for by somebody. So if it's an amenity, is it something that the council will take on? Because you want something to live on and live on as a safe resource and to be looked after over the years. You don't want to have something that's created and then left that becomes into disrepair. So you want to have something that becomes vital and living part of the community. It does cost money, and therefore I think it needs to be carefully thought about. But quarrying is all about planning, and if these things, as David said, can be thought about as early as possible, the quarrying company can do an awful lot to shape the quarry as it's working for an eventual outcome. So I think it's all about community consultation, really.
Good. Okay, but How do you, in making these new places, let's imagine for a moment that we've got an unlimited source of finance and we create an Eden project in every disused quarry, shall we say, in the Mendes, I know that's pipe dreams, but if we were able to do that. There's a nagging question in the back of my head, though, that there's still a need for the people, especially young people, to find areas of privacy, of natural sort of areas, which indeed disused quarries are, aren't they? They're a wonderful place to hide out with your mates. Which leads me to ask you the question that that business of risk taking, you know, is it a human factor that you're going to have to deal with for the rest of your working lives, and certainly we'll have to tackle? How can you stop young people wanting to take risks and seeking those areas where indeed there are challenges?
Well, certainly I think that quarries are going to always be attractive areas, and certainly if I think back when I was young, we used to go around to some of the local quarries, disused quarries, you know, it was a place that we all thought was very excited, and I think it's one of the things that certainly brought me into the industry was I loved the actual, I loved to see the equipment, I loved to see the actual stone itself and the whole process I found very, very exciting. And certainly it's one of the things that you know, brought me into the industry itself. So I don't think we're ever going to get away from the fact that for young people, and perhaps not just young people as well, everybody finds the actual activities that take place in a quarry absolutely fascinating. But I think we've still got to get the message over to people. You know, we're very happy for those people to come and actually see what we do during the working week in a safe environment where they can actually see what we're actually doing. But please, please don't come in and try and get your sort of thrill through actually coming and looking into the quarry, you know, when there aren't people around.
Thank you, David. Well, I'm sure that we'll all try and preserve that risk-taking in the future. We're going to go on in the next part of our programme to work that's being done in Froome College to support your safety initiative. But whilst we're preparing ourselves for that, let's listen to Black Eyed Peas with their song, which is optimistic, I think, but also challenging things which are wrong in the world.
Yeah. weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Yeah. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found. Ask yourself.
Okay, well, here in Froome College, we've been trying to take the whole business of quarry safety very, very seriously, and we've joined the campaign with the quarrying industry to try and help our youngsters understand the dangers. One of the ways we're trying to tackle it is through humour, and what you're going to hear next is a short jingle which has been devised by some local writers and then put past groups of youngsters. Where, in fact, four classes of youngsters have listened to this and vetted it and talked about it and given us clues about whether it would in fact seriously affect their thinking. So here comes, this is a first jingle. This would be inserted between popular music for teenagers, which goes out between 12 and 2 on the radio station.
We find ourselves here deep in the wilds of the West Country in search of the Homo sapiens stupidicus. It plays a stupid game and is in danger of becoming extinct. Ah, I can see one now on the edge of this disused quarry. We shall attempt to sell. Oh dear, too late for that one.
And that would be repeated maybe 6 or 7 times during the course of the programme. There have been a series of about 10 of these produced. 6 of them have been produced by students themselves and will be injected into the programme. What your reaction is to using humour in this way to get to young people?
I think as long as it isn't seen to be offensive by people that actually have been affected. I mean, you know, it's difficult for me to get into the mind of a teenager. I think that the reason that we're working with Froome College as one of our pilot schools is because we particularly want teenagers to choose how best to communicate to their peers. And we know the messages that we want to get across, and if they think that the best way to communicate that is through something like this, then so be it. You know, it's difficult to say it was fun. I mean, it made me snigger, but then it is an important, it's a very important message that we want to get across. But ultimately, you know, it's there are different ways that you can do this, and if this works, then great.
Well, what we'll be doing, of course, is to evaluate this this whole thing at the end of the session. We'll ask students whether they've even noticed the jingles and what effect they had on them. Another one, incidentally, was based on that famous Smash advert, you know, with the people up in spacecraft looking down at the world and parodies that whole bit about how stupid Earthlings are going to play in quarries. And the kids enjoyed that one, too. OK, our second attempt, then, to get to the conscience of people is through our soap. Tomorrow morning we're launching a daily serial, a drama serial, which features a number of fictitious characters who live in Froome. And there's two characters, Toby Turner and his friend Ben, actually stray into one of the quarries and have an accident. And we're going to try and feature that in the series. So I'm about to play for you that excerpt from our serial, Quantock Court, which opens tomorrow morning on the radio.
Don't make any inside, who ask all sorts of questions, and then they'll say I can't go anywhere.
You should have come to school on your bike, then we wouldn't have to creep around like this for fear of your monster dad.
My folks don't want me riding around on my bike, so I know the roads a bit better.
If you can't ride around on your bike, how can you get to know them better?
Duh, parents don't think like people. It's rules first, logic second. But where we lived in London, you don't go out on a bike, except places with cycleways. How far is it to the quarry? Can we walk there?
It's 20 minutes on a bike, but it takes forever if you walk it.
It took me 40 years to walk to this quarry, and when I got there, they'd abandoned it. Do you think we'll see any UFOs tonight?
We might. The best time to see them is just as it gets dark.
Go on then, I'll follow you.
Behind those gates.
No, look at them gates. They're all barbed wires.
There's a way in behind that bush. You can lift up the wire mesh fence and fall under.
Oh, that was easy enough.
Give us a hand, I'm caught. Give me a real heave.
That did it. You okay?
It was only the strap of the binoculars that got caught.
It's a long way down, isn't it? There's a lake down there.
My dad says it.
Oh no. What?
Dad's fence have gone over the edge.
How the hell did that happen?
The strap broke. He's going to kill me. They've got a shed load of dosh.
I can see them. On a grassy bit at the bottom, right beside the water. They look okay.
Yeah, but how do we get them back? Oh God, I'm seriously dead.
I'll climb down and get them for you.
You can't climb down there. It's really dangerous. What happens if you fall in? My dad reckons it's 100 feet deep and freezing cold.
I didn't swim, you know. We had a climbing wall at my last school. I was ace on it. Looks an easy climb. Here goes.
I don't think you should. Our teachers are always giving us lectures about this place being so dangerous. And it's dark. I can hardly see you.
Quit fussing. It was you who just started to panic in the first place. Only be 5 minutes. There's so many foot handles, it's like going down a ladder.
I've got a really bad feeling about this.
It's not hard at all. I only have to be a bit careful because there are some loose bits.
Give it up, Toby. Just climb back out, please.
No, I'm halfway down already. You need to be easy. Oh, no, no. Ah!
Toby!
And so Toby, in fact, falls down into the quarry. If you want to know what happened to that, of course, you'll have to tune in tomorrow morning to Quantock Court, which runs every day, twice a day, through the rest of our short license. Okay, so that's using drama to try and capture young people's attention. What do you feel about that one?
I thought it was excellent. I think that everybody's used to watching EastEnders. There's nothing better than drama in real life. And what I particularly like was the focus on peer pressure, which is something that we know is very difficult with teenagers. Your friends egging you on. It's something that we definitely want to address more and learning from teenagers as to why they do that. So I like the realism, and I thought it was good.
Thank you. Okay, well, just give me time now, coming up to news time, to thank our guests very much for coming here this morning. David Ambrose, Foster Yeoman Quarry Manager, thank you very much for your contributions.
Pleasure.
And, of course, Elizabeth Clements, who is the Quarry Projects Association Communications Director. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. But coming up to news time now, thank you for listening to Your Shout. And here we go with the opening jingle in just a couple of seconds' time. Thanks for listening.